Hey everybody, quick introduction to today's special bonus episode. I recently did a podcast with Shane Walsh, who's been on this podcast. It was in October, and he's also been on my online business podcast, talking all things business. But I was on his fitness podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to pop up this episode as it touches on things that I haven't previously covered in the podcast myself, and I think there's a lot of value in here. So Shane titled the episode, Slimming Clubs, Do People Fail Diets or Diets Fail People? Counting Calories, Fitness Trackers, and Dieting for the Right Reason. And in this episode from Shane's podcast, I do a deep dive into my nutritional philosophy, which a lot of you will be familiar with, but more so with the lens of weight loss towards slimming clubs, counting calories and who that is and isn't for, and fitness trackers. So I get asked a lot about fitness watches. So smartwatches, the Apple Watch, the Huawei Watch, or Fitbits or Garmins, and to know the limitations of those pieces of equipment. I'm a big fan. I absolutely love fitness watches, but it's very important to understand the limitation that they have when it comes to their calories burnt or tracking your sleep, and know where they're accurate and be aware of where they're inaccurate or inaccurate. And slimming clubs is something that I haven't touched on this podcast prior, and some of the pros and the cons of slimming clubs. So as opposed to coming at it from a completely negative standpoint, today's episode goes into my philosophy on here are the pros, here's who it works for, and here are the cons, and here are the negatives to watch out for. And I think it's a very applicable episode kind of coming into the new year, because the temptation will be to potentially jump into one of those clubs or jump on a plan that might not be a good fit for you. So today's bonus episode is my appearance on the Shane Walsh Fitness Podcast. So we go through everything that I've discussed, everything I've talked about. I hope you enjoy. Have a great Christmas. Or I hope you had a great Christmas. Have a great new year. And catch you all on Monday.
Brian, my man, how are we?
Shane, I am fantastic. Really looking forward to having another chat. This has got to be, I was trying to count up how many times I've been on your podcast, you've been on my two podcasts, the business podcast and the fitness podcast. Is this six, seven, maybe?
Five, six.
We're definitely up there, though. We're getting into that. We're getting close to the old double digits.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking, like, this is your hat-trick appearance. So it's like soccer. I am used to give out football for the hat-trick appearance. So I think you deserve a present for this. Forget, come three times on this, because you came on this last year around the same time.
Yeah, I remember that. It's just funny you said that about the hat trick, because I literally have a podcast coming out on Monday, and I've used that term for the first time ever on Monday's podcast with Maeve Madden, and it's from Soccer AM, because that's one of my favorite shows. I still watch that every Saturday. So anyways, completely amazing. Side note.
That would be cool to hear Maeve again. I know this episode is going to be a little bit different from what we normally do. We normally do kind of like a heavy mindset episode. So I think this week is going to be a little bit more of a kind of a nutrition side of things. I know I sent you over the topics and you were like, yes, let's do them. So I think the main ones that kind of people are struggling with at the minute is kind of like, it's kind of coming up to Christmas. People are not going to really know what's going to happen. But I think the big thing that kind of happens at the minute is, the big question I wanted to ask was, do people fail diets or do diets fail people? I think it's one of those topics that it's up for discussion. And I'd love to hear your thought on it, because you've been in the industry for so long, and what's your experience on it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And as soon as you told me about the topics, I'm like, yes, let's definitely do a deep dive into this. And I kind of fall somewhere in the middle of that. It's a very kind of apt time to talk on this conversation, because I was chatting to you a little bit off air. I mean, you chat quite, you know, randomly back and forth on Instagram, just catching up and seeing how things are. And I just sent off the proof for what will be the new book. It's out in September, but that's all based around this topic. So when you were telling me, but do you want to come on and talk about, you know, diets and how they fail people or if people fail them? I'm like, oh yes. I'm like, this is super fresh in my mind at the minute. And the kind of the whole premise of that book, and again, this isn't a pitch for the book, because it's not out till next year, but in terms of top of mind, I expanding on a lot of the ideas that it's not the diet necessarily that fails people. And I know we're not going to talk about mindset, but I'm going to bring mindset into it, because I think there's a big argument for how you approach your nutrition and how you approach a diet is very mindset based. Because, like, we know the tactics, like there's a micro and a macro when it comes to nutrition and diet. Like, the tactics are calorie deficit, carbohydrate cycling, you know, clean foods, 80-20 eating, like they're all tactics. But for a large part, when people don't do well on their diet, weight loss, trying to lose body fat, trying to change their body composition, in a lot of cases, Shane, it's normally the approach that they're taking towards their nutrition, the actual mindset that they're coming at with their nutrition in general. And I don't think diets per se fail people. And I've kind of changed my opinion on this in recent years, because once upon a time, I would have said, you know, don't do diets. I'm like, diets are crap. They're non-sustainable by their very nature. They're short term. They're not setting you up for something that you can potentially do over the long term. And as a result of that, I was very anti-diet. Now, I'm still in that camp per se, but I think there's definitely an argument for understanding that certain diets work better at certain times. Like if you're preparing for a wedding, or if you're preparing for an event or something that you want to look your best for, I'm like, yeah, you should probably use the tool of dieting to get you to the body composition you want for that. But when it comes to overall what you're doing the other 11 months of the year or the other 10 months of the year, it's approaching things with a nutrition mindset versus a diet mindset. It's like finding something that's sustainable for you. And I have just very kind of straightforward principles that I get people to follow, and that's that a nutrition plan versus a diet is one that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, includes foods that you enjoy, and is something that you can stick to. I think if you, regardless of what plan that is, it doesn't really matter. And this is something that I've kind of been arguing a little bit back and forth recently, because people will say things like, and I know you cover this on your platforms between Instagram, but particularly on the podcast, if someone asks me about the keto diet or carbohydrate cycling or a vegan diet or a paleo diet or, you know, even Slimming World or Juice Plus, things I'm not a particular fan of, but the same kind of mindset approach will apply. It's very much of, can you stick to it? If it's something that includes foods that you enjoy and it fits into your lifestyle and schedule, it doesn't matter per se what kind of diet, quote unquote, diet you follow, but they have to be able to tick off those things. Like that's where things like Slimming World and Juice Plus and different diet clubs can kind of fall down, because they don't hit that first tick box or that first box tick of, can you stick to this long term, or does it include foods that you enjoy, or does it fit into your lifestyle and schedule? It might hit that one, but then fails on the other two rungs. So what I would get people to consider, and we can bounce back and forth in this because I'm curious to hear what you have to say, Shane, in terms of your opinion, I don't think it's diets per se that fail people. I think it's their approach towards the diets that fail them. But you also have to get clear on the front end. Are you looking for something short term, or are you looking for something long term? Like there's a big difference there. Again, something I've changed my mind about in recent years is I've always been pushing the long term sustainability. And I believe that for people that come and work with me, for people that come and work with you, because you have a very similar philosophy as a coach, it's setting people up for the long term, for something sustainable. But there are people out there who just want a quick fix and who just want the short term fix. And that's fine if that's you, but you're not going to work with the likes of me. You're not going to work with the likes of you, Shane, if that's your mindset. And I think it's very important for people listening to this to get clear on, are you looking for something you can stick to over the long term, or are you just looking for a quick fix for whatever reason, right, wrong, indifferent, because you've gained a bit of extra pounds over COVID? I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you go for a quick fix, but if that's where your head is at, you'll probably have to make those failures and make those mistakes yourself. You know, it's getting repeatedly punched in the face and wondering why you have a black eye. Like you have to do that sometimes to make the mistakes yourself before you switch your mindset towards a long-term approach. So when it comes to diets, I think that it works in the middle. Some people fail it because they don't have the right mindset towards it. Some people aren't clear on why they're dieting or following a nutritional plan in the first place. And I think before you decide on who you're going to work with, or if you're going to design something yourself, if you're going to follow a diet online, if you're going to follow a nutritional plan from a coach, all the variables and everything in between, it's important to get clear on, well, what are you doing it for? What's the reason? Like, why do you want to lose weight or reduce body fat? Like, what's the you know, what you do is less important than why you're doing it. Get clear on the front end, and then once your mindset is kind of geared towards, I'll do something that's going to work for me, ideally, as I said, include foods that you enjoy and something that's sustainable. Again, if that's not your goal and you have something different, by all means, if that's what you tell your coach on the front end, then that's what you work towards. But get clear on that. And then after it, the diet is just the tactics you follow. Like that's all a keto diet is, reduce your carbohydrate and protein intake and work mainly off fat, either dietary fat and body fat, and get yourself into ketosis. Like that's the tactic. It's vegan diet's the same. You're removing meat, and by proxy, you're removing some high calorie foods, which might help you with the caloric deficit to lose weight and lose body fat. They're the tactics. If you can stick to that, by all means, do it. But at the end of the day, get clear on why you're doing it. And if you're doing it for something that's long-term and sustainable, then it has to fit into your lifestyle and schedule, and it has to be in alignment with your goals, and it needs to include things that you enjoy. If you're doing it for the short term, then I'd probably be passed on today's podcast because you're probably not going to hear it from my side, but there are people serving that marketing community out there for sure. But what are your thoughts, Shane? Do you think diets fail people, or do you think people fail diets? What's your kind of philosophy towards that?
I think it's, as you said, it's kind of in the middle. It depends what your headspace is. Like, I know we were talking last week, or like I ran a couple of 8 week challenges and stuff like that, and I said to you, like, this isn't sitting well with me, that I was promoting that. I kind of did it because I obviously have the higher end product for the one-to-one, and I wanted to try and get people in so I can kind of instill stuff into their ideologies and remove the stigma around food. But I was like, this eight week thing isn't for everyone, and I think potentially some people look for quick fixes when there are not so many quick fixes in their ideologies towards themselves or their food. I think it's really important to kind of diet for the right reasons. As you said, having a why. I always go back to the quote by Nietzsche, the German philosopher. It says, he or she who has a why will overcome any how. And that's really, really important to have that kind of ideology around. And I think we live in a kind of a click now generation, want everything now. You can click on buy now on Amazon. You can swipe left or right, get instant gratification on the apps. You can get a double tap and get a dopamine hit on social media. And it's important to say to yourself, right, do I want to do this the right way for, say, and if it takes me 12 months, it takes me 12 months, and be content and sit around a weight or sit around a clothes size that works for yourself? Or do I want to just do a hard diet and get ready in 6 or 7 weeks for a holiday when we can go on holidays? It has to be up to the person. But for the vast majority of people that I work with on a daily basis, it's more of a lifestyle thing. It's more an introductory into lifestyle, how to fuel their body, how to listen to their body, how to challenge those thoughts that are coming into their head, and how to potentially retreat from the stuff that's been rammed down their throat from the likes of Slimmer Clubs by Keto Steve and Keto Karen and all that kind of stuff. And it's important to be able to decipher what it works, what you think is going to work for you. There's nothing wrong with either balance, but it's about finding balance, whatever that balance looks like for you.
Yeah, I think a mindset shift that's useful for people is to think about dieting as a skill and not as a philosophy. And when it comes to what I mean by that, I mean dieting in of itself is a skill. Like, there's skill acquisition involved, like understanding that if you reduce the amount of calories you eat, you'll reduce body fat. Like, that's, you know, calorie intake 101, calorie deficit 101. But that's a skill. It's something that you need to learn. And one of the things that I put forward, I kind of talk about this in the new book, is that if you're a fitness model or a bodybuilder, I'm like, you need to know that skill. I'm like, it's a basic skill requirement. The same way as if you play football, you need to know how to kick a ball. If you play basketball, you need to know how to throw a ball into a hoop or into a ring. But what happens with people is they have dieting as a philosophy that, right, I need to lose weight, I need to go on a diet. I'm like, that's not a good way to approach dieting, in my opinion. And as I said, and as you said, Shane, like, there's people out there that will cater to that 6-8 week physical transformation that is like chicken and broccoli for 6 weeks to lose a load of weight. And by all means, I'm not as anti that as I once was, because I normally get people who have had that as their experience, and I've been able to empathize with it over the years, because people are looking for they're stuck in a pain point right now. They're stuck in a lack of confidence or lack of energy, and they think that, or else they're stuck in an unhappy place, and they associate losing weight and looking a certain way with being happier or being fulfilled or feeling a certain feeling. Like, in most cases, and I put this on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago, in a lot of cases, and this is from my experience working with people directly and from indirectly chatting to people on social media, a lot of people, when they're trying to lose weight, think that their happiness and how they're going to feel will be affected by their weight loss. And that's not always the case. Now, for someone that's obese, that's morbidly obese, and whose life would be dramatically, or life quality will dramatically be increased as a result of losing weight, everybody else outside of that who's trying to reduce a little bit of body fat, trying to lose a little bit of weight, like, I can't guarantee losing weight is going to make you feel happier. All I can guarantee is if you lose 10 pounds, you will weigh 10 pounds less on a scale. And what happens to a lot of people is the ladder against the wrong wall philosophy. They start climbing down or climbing up this ladder that is against a figurative wall for weight loss or fat loss, and then they lose the 10 pounds, they lose the 15 pounds, And then what happens? It's normally in a lot of cases like, oh, fuck, I feel the same. I need to lose 15 pounds or I need to lose 20 pounds. I'm like, that's it. Like, that's, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And but it's so easy to fall into that trap because we think, I've done it myself, just not in the terms of weight loss, the I'll be happy when fallacy. You know, I'll be happy when I'm X amount of body fat. I'll be happy when I can fit Y dress size. I'll be happy when I'm able to put on Z jean size. That mindset is all about the dieting philosophy and the I'll be happy when philosophy, which can be a very unuseful or non-useful way to approach something like nutrition, especially when it comes to weight loss and fat loss. And again, just to clarify, they're two different things, but I'll use them interchangeably. Weight loss is reducing numbers on a scale. Fat loss is reducing fat in your body. I know you covered this a lot, Shane, so your listeners will know this. But for those that are kind of coming in new or unfamiliar with that, and the dieting mindset, it's very important to realize that you can use it for a time if you're trying to get ready for something, and it's a good skill to have. You know, cut your calories, cycle your carbohydrates, increase your protein, add in extra cardio, move more, really focus on your step count. All of those things can help you lose body fat over a shorter period of time. They may not be the most sustainable thing long term. You probably want to have some form of caloric refeed, either weekly or monthly, or not dieting or trying to lose body fat all the time. One of the things that I'll regularly tell people who come into my circle through the podcast is, like, if you've been dieting half your adult life, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, there's a problem. You've got feedback there that what you've been doing up until now isn't working and you need to change strategy slightly. And your goals should change. So if you're not morbidly obese or very overweight, like, your goals shouldn't be fat loss or weight loss for a 12 or 18 month period. It should switch. Like, it doesn't always have to be body composition based. Like, sometimes it's losing body fat. Sometimes it's trying to improve a 5 kilometer run. Other times it's trying to get stronger on a squat or a deadlift. But your goals should change, because if you're trying to lose weight and lose body fat for 6, 12, 18 months and you're not obese or massively overweight to start with, there's something wrong with your process, because your goals should change. And I think when you see dieting as a philosophy, which is what is kind of a mindset problem that a lot of people have when it comes to the way they approach their nutrition, like, that's a recipe for failure from the front end. So there's a few things there that I think it's worthwhile people to kind of check in with if it jumps out at you. If you've been dieting half your adult life, or your goal has been weight loss or fat loss for the last 12, 18 months, you've got feedback that something needs to change. And in a lot of cases, you know, it's not even the tactical stuff we're talking about, which I'm sure we'll get onto. It's just your mindset in general around nutrition.
Yeah, I think 100% it is the mindset thing. And you've mentioned that I'll be happy when, like, you can't predict the future. You can't read people's minds. Like, you can't see into the future. It's really, really tiring trying to always think about the future, that I'll be happy when I'm a certain weight. If you've never been there, you can't tell if you're ever going to be that, be happy. And the word dieting in the dictionary means short term. So I've had so many people message me saying, through DMs and stuff like that, that I've been dieting for 20 or 30 years. And I'm like, that's a long time. Like, dieting should be kind of done in small sporadic steps and along the way. And there should be breaks and all this kind of stuff without going all sciencey or technical. But to be dieting all the time for your whole adult life and seeing failure and failure and failure and seeing, and then you're not really listening to the feedback, you need to kind of potentially pause and kind of say, right, if this was one of my kids, or if this was my friend or my auntie or whoever it was, what advice would you give to those? You tell them that this isn't working. Well, they may not like it, but you can say it in a nice way and not be a dickhead about it. But I think for yourself, you need to potentially sit back and say, right, I've tried this. Is this me that's failed, or is it my ideology that I've gone out too gung-ho, I've cut out carbs, I've cut out sweets, I've cut out alcohol, and then as soon as I start to bring it back in, it's like a famine or feast scenario, and then you're eating everything around, you're eating the wall, you're eating the carpets, everything. And it's really, really important for you to kind of listen to your body and know to be in tune with it. And that was one of the things we spoke about a lot when you very kindly had me on your podcast. But you mentioned the quote, the insanity quote. I put up a post recently about insanity is the definition of going to Slimmer World over and over again expecting different results.
That's brilliant.
But some people think I don't like Slimworld. I don't like Slimworld. I'll say it now. I think it's a big pile of shit. But, and I know Brian may not have be as strong as thought as I have on it, but I just feel that there's no real education on it. I'm going to let Brian go on thoughts on those slimming clubs.
Yeah, so it's not that I have not a strong response as you. It's just that I'm slightly less emotionally attached from it from years of working with people who have came off the back of it. And I think you're similar, because when we spoke, you know, the first time on this podcast, and, you know, we've been friends for years now, we were both very anti-slimming worlds. You very much so, me coming out of it slightly. And you've even mellowed on it over the last couple of years, because what, and I'm not sure, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Shane, but this has definitely happened to me. As you work with more people who are coming off the back of that, you learn to empathize with the reasons why people signed up. And just because it's, and it's not that it makes me dislike Slimming World, because I agree completely with what you said. Like, there's no education to it. So, like, as someone that's, you know, both of us are qualified nutritionists, like, you're looking at that going, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, that's the only way you can approach it. But when people are going into it, I get where they're coming from. Because they're stuck, they're feeling insecure about themselves, they're feeling a little bit lonely maybe, they might be feeling a bit unhappy, they're definitely feeling unhappy with the way they look or their body confidence. So it's an easier, what can be perceived as an easier introductory point for somebody to make a change for losing weight and reducing body fat. And like, it's branded really well. Like, I seen, like, because we buy, my mum and dad, they buy papers. They're still in the paper kind of generation. So Sunday papers, and like, Jesus, this is going to come January. You'll see all these fantastic before and after pictures from, say, Slimming World. Now, there's a huge availability bias from those. Like, people need to understand some of the cognitive biases when it comes to how these things are sold. And availability bias is the you know, that your ability to pull available information just because it's readily available, as opposed to being statistically probable, which means that more people are afraid of dying in plane crashes versus car crashes, because, you know, we see more plane crashes that are highlighted on the media, etc. COVID-19 is a great example, without going down a side tangent, like, you know, compared to the amount of people that die in car crashes versus the amount of people that die in COVID. This isn't minimizing it, and anyone that's lost people due to it, you know, a massive apologies, and I hope everything turns out well in terms of how they deal with it. But the statistical probabilities are just way off skewed because of the availability bias. And what happens with things like Slimming World is, if you have 10,000 people coming through it, you're going to have 5 or 10 people who get amazing results, because they've gone from being really overweight to reducing their caloric intake, which is what happens. Like, if you go from eating 6,000-7,000 calories a day, which some people eat, to eating 2,000 calories a day, you're going to have a dramatic reduction in weight. Like, that's like, whether you did that with Slimming World and Sins, or whether you did that with a Mars bar and ate, you know, 12 Mars bars over the day, you know, or 7 or 8 Mars bars over the day to make up that calorie intake, you'd lose weight. Like, you'd lose body fat. It's just basically energy in, energy out. And when people see that, automatically they'll jump into, oh, well, I look like that, I want to get those results. So I see why people go into it. The problem with that is, you're not going to, most people don't get the results they expect out of it. There's normally a misalignment on expectations, because you're making your relationship with food potentially worse if it's bad already, or just bad in general if you're coming in at a neutral standpoint. Because what slimming clubs do in general across the board is they normally separate food into good and bad categories, which I think is a fucking terrible idea for an association. Like, food has no morals. There are no good or bad foods. Like, a chocolate bar isn't jumping around going, I'm bad for you. Like, a chocolate bar is just a caloric food that is low nutrient. That's it. That no more, no less. You know, broccoli, a head of broccoli is low calorie, high nutrient. No more, no less. Like, there's no good or bad foods. Like, they have no morals. But what slimming clubs do is they categorize things. They put foods into good or sins, in the case of Slimming World or other slimming clubs. They have their own versions and languages based on, you know, which one you're with. And other foods are good. Some foods are good, some foods are bad. And that's a very poor way to build a negative relationship with the way you see food. And you can break your relationship with food. Like, it's the same as, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody, you know, your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband or wife, and you're constantly yelling at each other and you're constantly angry with each other and you're never communicating, like, you're going to have a shit relationship. Like, there's no two ways about it. It's not going to be a healthy relationship. And going into slimming clubs where foods get categorized into good or bad is the food relationship equivalent of that, because it's reinforcing the belief that certain foods are bad. You know, one of the things that drives me crazy with things like Weight Watchers or anyone that does the weigh-ins, unless you're overweight or obese to start with, they reinforce the idea of, you know, here's your weigh-in day. And that drives me crazy, because like your weight can fluctuate daily. Like I wake up about 81 kilos every day and I go to bed at about 84, 85 kilos every day. That's what happens. Like weight fluctuates up and down. And that's why I talk about the difference between weight and losing body fat versus reducing weight. Losing weight is reducing numbers on a scale. There's nothing really, for the most part, to do with body composition in general. Whereas losing body fat is very much about reducing the amount of fat in your body. Now, by all means, you can get both. You can lose weight and you can reduce body fat at the same time. And that happens to a lot of people. But confusing the two things is very unhelpful. The analogy I use is, it's like comparing the number in your bank account to see how good you are in bed. I'm like, that doesn't help you. I'm like, it doesn't matter if there's X amount in your bank account. If you're shit in bed, you're shit in bed. Like, and that's what losing weight versus reducing body fat is like. Just because you've stepped on a scale and you've lost or gained weight doesn't mean your body fat has gone up or down. It just means that there might be, you know, more glycogen. You might have had, you know, excess carbohydrate that day or excess salt and sodium, and it's making you retain water. So now you weigh more. That has nothing to do with body fat levels. That has to do with weight. And I think when it comes to the clubs that people join, it reinforces those poor behavioral patterns around body image, around the scale, not understanding the difference between weight loss and fat loss. It reinforces negative eating patterns around separating foods into good and bad categories, which just isn't helpful for someone trying to heal their relationship or just build a better relationship with food. And again, I can argue some positive sides. Like one of the things that I've kind of thought about over the last couple of years is the reason people get good results on these plans. And it depends on their starting point. Because once upon a time, I was a little bit ignorant when I started off my journey first about, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, when I qualified first and was working with people. I was very anti-diet club. I'm like, why would anybody do this? I'm like, how are people getting results with this? But as I kind of got a little bit older and a bit more experienced, I realized that it was the starting point people were coming from. So if you have somebody, you know, Karen or Dave that you mentioned, and they're, you know, there's no Karens or Dave. Apologies for Karens and Daves. Listen, they're generic name. But Karen or Dave, if they've never made a conscious food choice in their entire life, and they're 32 years of age, and now they go to Weight Watchers or Slimming World or a slimming club, and now they're conscious of the food they're eating, there's a good chance they're probably going to lose weight and reduce body fat, because they've gone from not being conscious to ever eating any meal to at least having an idea that portion size matters or there's calories are a thing. And as a result, they're going to get some decent results. Like, so those clubs can get people from A to B. They generally don't get you from A to Z, but they can get you from A to B. And that's why I don't want to like blanket statements saying they're terrible and crap for everybody. I don't think they're good because of the negatives that I've mentioned, but there's definitely some benefit that they're serving, because there's a small portion of people who that's their entry point. And a lot of them will do it for 6, 12, 18 months. They'll, you know, rebound. They'll get poor results, or they'll get good results and then get back to worse than when they started. And then they end up seeking out the likes of you or the likes of me or the likes of, you know, Paul Dermody or Rebecca O'Rourke or David Young, loads of different people who have a very similar message. And then they can be helped. And they're not coming from a 0 to 1. They have this experience. They know that there's a problem with the way they're looking at their food. And then those people are normally easier to coach, because sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're more difficult, because if they've been doing it for years, they've got all these deep-rooted, seeded behavioral issues that you need to like nearly rewire. But for the most part, those people are easier to work with, because they've tried things in the past, they've got semi-decent results with it, and they've showed that they're able to stick to something, even though it's wrong, the ladder up against the wrong wall. They're people that you can kind of get on good results. Like, the people you can't help are the people who don't know they have a problem. The people that are still at the zero point. They've never consciously made a food choice. Like, you can't help those people. Like, they're not tuned into this podcast. They're not tuned into either of our social medias. You know, they are living their life, doing their thing. And if they're happy, amazing. You know, I don't equate weight loss with happiness. You know, after a certain point, if you're obese, yeah, you're going to have a dramatic increase in your life quality if you reduce that weight. But like, if you're happy and overweight and you like doing what you're doing, I'm like, fuck it, keep doing what you're doing. I'm like, you know, just because I'm into fitness and I'm into health and I work as a coach, like, I'm not going to be the, you know, the old adage, you know, don't ask your barber if you need a haircut, because they'll always say yes. Like, I don't want to be that fitness person that's like, everybody should be on a plan. I'm like, there's mental health benefits, physical health benefits, all of the things that I've seen myself and with people I work with. But I'm like, fuck, if you're happy doing what you're doing, you're a little bit overweight and carrying extra pounds and you love your life, you love eating the way you do, you don't really want to move, you're super happy, I'm like, fucking do you. It's for the people who fall outside that bracket, who are trying to make a change, who don't feel good in themselves, who aren't happy, and they're using the wrong thing, like slimming clubs, to try and get the results. They're the people that I'm always more tuned into. Just be aware that actions have consequences. And if you're repeatedly, as you said, going back to Slimming World and getting the same results and expecting different ones, like, that's insane. Like, make the change and make a choice to make a different, have a different action approach so that you can get new results. Like, if you keep doing what you keep, we've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always got. It's very much a case of, right, that hasn't worked. Take the failure as feedback, because that's all it is. It's not good or bad. It's your emotional attachment to it. Just because it hasn't worked doesn't make it good or bad. It's feedback that didn't work. And now you need to try another route, or you need to try another angle. And that can lead a lot of people our way. So as much an anti, as anti-slimming clubs as I once was, I'm slightly less now, even though I can lay out a lot of the negatives. I can lay out some of the benefits, as I've said there. But it's very much a case of finding what works for you and not necessarily throwing out the baby with the bathwater, because sometimes people need to trip. You know, it's the old philosophy that, you know, you walk before you run. Sometimes people need to trip up before they realize, well, that's not how you walk, or that's not how you run. And what these slimming worlds, or slimming clubs, apologies, indirectly can do is they can make people trip up and fall and make them realize that this isn't what they should be doing. And that can lead them towards a path of something more sustainable, which I'm a fan of.
Yeah, I think, like, as you always say, you kind of have a positive without a negative. And I think it's super and super important to, like, if it is working for you, amazing. But I think from both of us working in the industry, like nearly 15 years between the two of us, I think it's important to kind of say to yourself, right, if it is impacting your mood, it is impacting your energy levels, impacting you as a person, it's kind of like, that's more important than what it says in the scales. I just don't like the whole, like, the community aspect's amazing, but the ideology of high five when you're down or a little bit of tut 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 when you're up on the scales is just a negative connotation, and a lot of people struggle with the scales, and then you're paying someone to weigh you in, and just kind of like, I have calmed down on it. My clients will say otherwise, but I have calmed down the ideologies towards slimming clubs. Like, if I look at my kind of like within my 5K, speaking of COVID, I have probably 4 meetings within my 5K when things were open. So there are people still go to them. They're a clever business model, and I think even the creator of them, or the previous MD of them, has come out and said 86-88% of people who do these fail, and that's the reason why people keep coming back. So it's important to, like, listen to the feedback. If it hasn't worked for yourself, but if it has worked for yourself, by all means, and you're happy where you're at, amazing. And that's the most important thing, because a lot of people do struggle with that. Do you feel that it's like, as a parent as well, do you feel that there's is it the system or is it the education that is letting a lot of people down with regards to kind of and the nutrition? Because there's so much information out there, but people are really, really struggling to find what is actually the truth.
That's a great question. I'm going to double back just before I do, because you made a reference there about the tut-tut and the scale. And something that I find has helped a lot of my people that I've worked with particularly is, you know, when you go into those the clubs and you step on the scale and it's a hurrah and a celebration if you're down, you know, if you lost weight, and it's a tut-tut if not. I'm like, the way weight fluctuates, that's literally the equivalent of people rolling dice and a tut-tut if you roll a 3. And a celebration if you roll a 6. I'm like, you have, like, it could be up or down. There's so many variables that determine your weight, the stress levels of the day, the amount of water you drank, the food you've eaten, your amount of sleep. All of these things affect weight. It's like rolling dice. So anyone that's been in that scenario where they come away and their self-esteem is feeling low because they're up a pound or up half a pound, I'm like, look, if you roll a dice and you didn't roll a 3, you wouldn't be upset. I'm like, so don't get upset if your scale is slightly up, because there's so many things that are variables that are going to determine whether your scale goes up or down. But to come back to what you said about the parenting system and the system failing people, it's a funny one. I can't really speak to it outside of what I've experienced in my own life. Now, I probably have better experience than most with this, because my background has been as a primary school teacher. So I was a primary school teacher for 4 years. So I have a little bit, probably more experience than the average nutritionist or personal trainer in that area, because you see what kids are eating from a very young age. And there's definitely a lack of educational element around food, but it's very, I don't know the way to fix it. All I can tell you is someone that's a parent now, my daughter's five, the approach that I take is very much I try not to separate foods into good and bad categories with her, even though that's probably not a bad way to approach a nutritional philosophy for a 5, 6, or 7 year old, because they see the world in black and white. But it's very much separating them slightly into healthy and unhealthy versus good and bad. And then, like, you know, Holly's my daughter, I try and make sure that she eats her breakfast, lunch, and dinner each day. And then if she wants other foods that fall outside of that, I'm like, eat the ice cream, eat the cookies, eat the chocolate. But she knows that they're unhealthy food. She knows they're not as good as, you know, a normal dinner she'd be having with, you know, potatoes and broccoli and chicken or whatever it is. So it's nearly that on a micro scale, that people aren't educated and they're confused. And the only analogy or the parallel I can draw is, don't, separating foods into good and bad categories is fine if you're a 5 year old. I'm like, if you're 5 years of age, I'm like, that's fine. But like, if you're fucking 35, that's a terrible idea. Like, it's just, it's not a helpful way to approach things. And if you fall on the spectrum where education is your issue, now nutrition is a little bit, it's so simple but so complicated. And when I say simple, like, weight loss and fat loss is such a simple process. Like, it's basic calories in, calories out. Now, it's not easy. You know, there's a lot of other things that make it complicated in terms of behavioral issues and finding something that works for you and the education around it. But the simplicity is as straightforward as that. It's eat less calories than your body needs so that you can tap into the fat stores and use the stored energy on your body, which is fat. Like, that's it. It's that simple. Whereas something like, you know, building muscle is a lot more complicated. Like, you need to create enough resistance and you need enough amino acids to repair from it. Like, it's multi-layered. But weight loss and fat loss is a really simple process. And every diet out there that works for weight loss or fat loss is all working off that calorie deficit principle. Keto diet that helps weight loss, calorie deficit. Vegan diet that helps weight loss, calorie deficit. IIFYM, if it fits your macros, or flexible dieting, if it's in a calorie deficit, that's what's working for fat loss. It's the one thing that's consistent across. So it's really just about what nutritional philosophy do you need to follow, or what kind of plan do you need to follow in order to get into a calorie deficit, and then stick to it. That's it. Like, again, I don't want to oversimplify it either, because it's complicated. There's behavioral issues and deep-seated habits from, you know, people's association with food from childhood. You know, the Irish philosophy of, you know, clear your plate. Like, you know, Irish and English philosophy, it's very kind of UK and Irish based of clear your plate. And that, there's a lot of moving parts. So when it comes to education, as opposed to kind of getting too macro with the system breaking or the system failing people, identify if you're one of those people who the system has failed, in the sense that you know you don't have a good education around food, i.e. you don't know the difference between what foods are low calorie and what foods are high calorie. Like, I had somebody ask me on my TikTok last week, and I get asked this at least once a week on Instagram or TikTok. You know, I don't eat a lot of food, but I can't seem to lose weight. I'm like, that's because food quantity doesn't really matter. It's calorie intake that's important when you're trying to lose weight and lose fat. Like, you can eat a lot of food and not have a lot of calories. If your diet is mostly composed of, you know, lettuce and chicken breast and, you know, low calorie foods, berries, you could probably eat a lot of those foods in terms of quantity and still not be getting that many calories. Equally, you can go to McDonald's 3 times a day and have 3 Big Macs and you're in a massive calorie surplus, even though you didn't eat that much food. Or even McDonald's once a day, you're eating not that much food for a lot of calories. And so food quantity doesn't matter as much as people think. It's calorie intake that's important when fat loss and weight loss is the goal. So what I would say is, if you fall on that side where you don't understand basic caloric intake, find a way to expand your knowledge on it. Find a way to expand your circle of competence, you know, listening to podcasts like this, Shane, listening to podcasts like mine, following social media channels that give you good filtering, probably actually not following, filtering your social media channels so that you're following the right people is probably better advice than actually following all the different accounts, because it's very much drowning in information, stir for knowledge when you follow too many things. But figure out who is it that can help you. Is it me? Is it Shane? Is it a previous guest you brought on? Whose message do you connect with? And then consume their content around nutrition and educate yourself that way around food and nutrition and how it works. And if you're someone who's on the other end of the spectrum, that you know that sweet potato is a similar calorie intake to normal potato, but slightly different effects on blood sugar, you're kind of higher on the spectrum of knowledge with nutrition, but you have behavioral issues, then you're looking around your mindset, you're looking around, you know, your emotional response, your triggers to food, you're looking at your habit system. So what habits have you ingrained or reinforced that aren't supporting you in terms of you sit down at the couch every day at a certain time and you go through a tub of Ben and Jerry's, or emotional triggers, your boss shouts at you, or your boyfriend or husband yells at you, or you have a fight and you turn to food. You're looking for emotional triggers. So that's why I'm saying it's complicated, that there's lots of moving parts to it, but you need to figure out where do you fall on the spectrum, and then you decide, do you want to work with a coach to try and fix that, or do you want to try and do it yourself? That just depends on a time, money and resource thing on what's going to work best for you. But that's kind of my thought system when it comes to the system being broken. It's more pull it back to the individual, find out where you fall on that spectrum, and then try and educate yourself to fill in the gaps in your knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's really, really important to make sure that if you are kind of filtering out people, it is to filter out people, because there is information overload and you can get bogged down and you kind of get different ideologies. And generally, if the information is too good to be true, well, then it's generally too good to be true. And if they're potentially promoting something, they're potentially promoting a supplement, depends on the person, whatever it may be. And like the science is calories in, calories out. But as you said, there's a whole lot of ideologies, behaviors, triggers, emotions, relationships behind that as well, and they definitely have to be taken into account by the person whenever they're starting on a journey, fitness related, weight loss journey, whatever it may be. But also, it also has to be taken into account by that person and by the coach, and it's about finding that right balance for that person. But it's always, you always have to stay in your lane. As a coach, I have to stay in my lane an awful lot. I have no problem referring people out if I feel there's something underlying, whether it's a binge eating disorder, or if it's something else going on mentally, or a breakup or something like that. I have my people who I will say, right, ring this person and try to book in an appointment. I'm not a trained psychologist. I can read as many books as I want, but that doesn't make me an expert. That just means that I have a little bit more information than someone else. But it's important to have those people around you that you can and bounce off ideas. And like, I use Brian as a perfect example. I messaged Brian last week about something, and Brian came back to me with advice straight away. And it's important to have those little buffers and be careful of where you're taking your advice from. And it's particularly with kind of the nutrition stuff. There's the very simple nutrition stuff, and then there's the extremely, extremely detailed, like, so much analysis can be done on nutrition, but you're better off sticking to the simple principles rather than trying to get bogged down and being pulled left, right and center. The one thing that kind of comes up an awful lot through DMs for myself is moving away from, or seeing exercise as a way of burning calories. This happens a lot. I know the gym's open back up, which is amazing, and people have been doing running, people are doing HIIT sessions, all this kind of stuff. People think that they burn more calories than they actually do when they're actually doing exercise. Can you kind of advice on how to get away from this, and what have you seen from the DMs and stuff like that that you've gotten as well?
Yeah, it's one of it's the paradox of the fitness watches is what I think of that is, yeah. Like, and I'm a huge fitness watch fan. I think Fitbit, Garmin's, Apple watches, I'm a massive fan of the gamification of fitness for step counts, etc. But no, I'm going to go off on a slight little mini rant here. Like, know the thing that you're using and its limitations. Like, that's, people ask me, I get asked this so regularly on social about calories burnt on, say, Fitbit or Garmin's or Apple Watches or whatever it is. And they're like, well, it says I'm burning X amount of calories. I'm like, that's not accurate for that. I'm like, that's not accurate for that. I'm like, just no, stop. Like, don't follow it for that. Don't follow it for your sleep. I'm like, it's not accurate. I literally had one of the girls in my program my BKF online program 2 weeks ago, she was like, she messaged me on Instagram and she was like, oh, I had a really poor night's sleep last night. Should I train today? I'm like, how are you feeling? She goes, oh, I feel great. I'm like, I thought you said you had a really poor night's sleep. She goes, yeah, my watch said I had a really bad night's sleep. I said, how do you feel? She goes, I feel great, really energetic. I'm like, fucking train. I'm like, don't listen to your watch. I'm like, your body's giving you better feedback on how you feel. And it's very easy to put everything into the calories burnt on the watch or the machine. Like, I get that a lot if I put up like a treadmill. Like, I do a lot of running. So if I run a 10K, it could come up that I burnt 800, 900 calories on the run. And people are like, wow, 800, 900 calories. I'm like, that's not accurate. I'm like, it might be within the ballpark, but I'm like, that treadmill wasn't hooked up to me. I was like, there's no way that treadmill is going to be accurate on how many calories I've burnt. I'm like, it hasn't factored in my weight, my height. It hasn't factored in my metabolic rate. It hasn't factored in the amount of muscle I have. Like, people burn calories at different rates. And one of the reasons I have an issue with the calories burnt is it leads and reinforces that idea of I can out train a bad diet, which a lot of people know consciously isn't a good thing to do and isn't true. But subconsciously, our actions don't map to that, meaning that we'll be like, well, I burned 800 calories in the gym today. You know, I'll just have this extra slice of pizza tonight, or I'll just have this extra half tub of Ben and Jerry's. And I'm like, if that's factored into your plan, I'm all for keeping your favorite foods. But like, don't eat extra slices and extra pieces of ice cream or bowls of ice cream just because you think you burnt more calories during your actual workout in the gym. I'm like, factor it into your calorie intake by all means, but realize that they're not super accurate and your body is always going to give you the best feedback. And one of the reasons that I get people when I work with Shane, that like my tracking metrics for them, the people who are more advanced, I normally get them to do measurements as well. I'm like, if you're able to do measurements, brilliant. But photos and clothing size, I'm like, they're my two major, and like, you know, similar to you, I come at everything from a science background. Like, yes, a DEXA scanner is better. Yes, fat, our body fat calipers and measurements are going to be more accurate technically, scientifically. But I'm like, what are your photos looking like? How are your clothes fitting? And then all the intangibles. How are you feeling? Like, how are your energy levels? How is your sleep? How's your sex drive? Like, all those intangibles are feedback as well. But when you're looking at photos and you're seeing your body change, I literally had a girl, this happened last week just because my program ended. So I had a lot of kind of conversation back and forth with some of my girls. I've guys in the program too, but you know, it's a 60-40 girl in terms of my BKF online program. And one of the girls sent me, and I'm going to put up this photo in the next few weeks because I actually had to, she sent it to me and was like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. I've given up alcohol for the last 6 weeks. I've been following the plan. I've been doing the training program. She's like, I haven't lost a pound. And she sent me the photos. And I'm like, did you see your photos though? She's like, yeah. She's like, I look great. My stomach and everything looks brilliant. But she's like, I haven't lost a pound. I'm like, I had to kind of let that sit with her for a minute. And I'm like, okay. I was like, right, let's flip this. I was like, let's say that you weigh less 10 pounds now. You're 10 pounds down over the 6 weeks, but your photo from week 1 and week 1 looked the exact same, or week 1 and week 6 looked the exact same. Or you stay the same weight and you get to use this photo and your week 6 photo and your clothes are all looser and you feel better, more energetic. I'm like, which would you pick? She was like, oh yeah, okay, I would pick the body transformation and the scale not changing. I'm like, there you go. I'm like, and then I had to explain to her and I've reinforced it over and over again, but she was an older woman, so she's very much the difference between weight loss and fat loss. Like, you can tell somebody that 50 times, but if you've been listening and following the diet lifestyle for, you know, 20 years before that, it's harder to rewire that mindset over a 6 week period. But that's why it's important to track the right things, because if you're looking to lose body fat and look better, you need to track that. If you're looking to lose weight because you need to weigh in properly for a fight or for whatever reason, you have a bikini show or you have a boxing match or a boxing fight and you need to weigh in a certain amount, I'm like, yeah, you should totally focus on losing your weight. But everybody outside of that should probably focus on losing their body fat. And the problem with tracking calories burnt in gym sessions or during workouts on a watch or on machines is people stop tracking the right thing. They stop tracking how their body's responding, and it can lead to kind of a false feedback that, well, I think I'm in a calorie deficit. It says I'm burning 2,000 calories every day and I'm eating 2,000 calories every day, or I'm eating 1,800 calories every day. So, you know, I should be in a big deficit. but they haven't changed in 3 months. Their body is the exact same. And I'm like, well, there's something off there then. I'm like, either your calories aren't being tracked properly or your exercise output isn't being tracked correctly. Something is off there. And instead of like getting into the weeds and how to track that. Now, if you're a marginal gain athlete, like you talked about, like when I think of, you know, the high-end nutrition, somebody that's looking to break down the chemical makeup of the sweet potato, I'm like, they're marginal gains. You're talking professional athletes, bodybuilders, competitors, the machines of the world. So the people who aren't the general population, their life, their desire, their everything that they drive towards is their sport or whatever it is they're trying to change in their body composition. They're not the general population, average Joe or Jane. Like for those people, yeah, the marginal gains matter. They should be tracking everything and doing everything rigidly. But for anyone that's just looking to lose a bit of body fat and lose weight, I'm like, just take your photos and see how your body's responding. Like, leave everything else. If you want to track your steps on your watch, brilliant. Love it for that. I love Fitbits and smartwatches for tracking steps or telling the time or timing rest periods. I'm like, fucking brilliant. Super accurate for that. But not for tracking how many calories you've burnt or not for tracking your sleep. So know the limitations in the things that you're using, because I'm a huge fan. Like, I don't want that to sound like I'm knocking them, because it's not. I love them. I think they're brilliant. I have them myself and I think they're brilliant. I bought one for my mom. I bought one for my dad. Like, I'm a huge fan of Fitbits, particularly Fitbit. I think they're a great brand. But know their limitations, like everything that you're using. And I think that's why it's important just to understand that, as you said, the calories burnt isn't always going to be accurate. And I would have no issue with that, except for people that get frustrated because they think they're doing the right things and they're not getting the results they want. Like, that's a really frustrating place to be in. Whereas at least if you know you're not doing the work and you know you're not dieting or you know you're not following your nutritional plan to the letter or you know you're not training or moving enough and you're not getting the results, at least you're like, well, fuck it, it's my fault. You can take ownership and responsibility. What I don't like to see with people is that they're getting frustrated because they think they're doing the right things when in fact they're not, because that's a very negative spiral and can be a very negative feedback loop that makes it very difficult to break, or can be difficult to break for people. So it's just bringing awareness to these things and realize that a lot of machines in general have limitations, so you need to test it yourself. Even things like TDDE calculators online, total daily energy expenditure calculators, they're brilliant for getting your basic metabolic rate, the amount of calories you need to stay the same weight and to function, and then adding in your daily activity so that you know how many calories you should be eating per day. But you still have to test that. You still have to see how many calories you need in order to get your body to respond, and your body will give you better feedback than any machine ever would.
I love that is the feedback that you should be using. Like, I love the Fitbits, I love the Garmins, whatever it may be, as they kind of buzz in your wrist and like, okay, go and get some steps, go get some fresh air, particularly what has been going on. But there's been research done by Harvard or Stanford, I can't remember which it is. They did analysis of all the watches, and the most reliable one was still about 20% margin for error. And that was the Apple iWatch. That's still 20% off when it comes to the likes of burning calories, because it doesn't take in your weight, your fitness levels, loads of different things. So it is important to use it for the right thing, which is you could be measuring your steps, but that's still not 100%, because if you smack your hand against your side, or else you're driving really slowly in the car, it can still pick up your steps. It depends. Or else stick it onto your dog or your child if you're doing a steps challenge. And that was one of the things I did at a corporate talk, was I told them to stick it onto the, if you want to win the steps challenge, stick it onto your dog.
That's a great idea.
But I think it's important to kind of make sure that, like with the photos, and I love that, because that came in for myself over the weekend, that one of the clients, she lost maybe two pounds, but if you look at it, like, she's a hyper responder for home workouts, like the serious genetics, and there was maybe a 2 pound difference. And I was like, well, how are your clothes feeling? Like, I have to get a new wardrobe. How are you? I look at the photos side by side. People can get a little bit of kind of bite back with the photos. Some people don't like doing them, and that's, by all means, that's personal preference. And I'll never share a photo that hasn't been approved or anything like that. I know you're the same with your crew as well. I think it's the photos, when people put their two photos side by side, they're like, holy shit. And it could be only 4 weeks, it could be 8 weeks, it could be whatever it may be. It's visual reward for all the energy and energy that you've put into it, either exerted or the energy you put in mentally towards it. The last question I'm going to ask Brian is regarding tracking of calories, because I think this is a big thing that kind of comes up over and over again. What are your thoughts about kind of tracking calories?
Not dissimilar to what I said there, that I think it depends on the person. Like the analogy I use for tracking calories for someone looking to lose weight or lose body fat, because people will ask me, do I need to track calories to lose weight or lose body fat? And the answer is no. Like the answer is you don't. It's just that it greatly increases your chances and success rate. Like the analogy I would use is if you're trying to save money, it makes sense to look at your bank statement to see if you're saving every week or every month. You don't have to. You might save otherwise, but just you greatly increase your chance rate or chance of success by tracking how much money you're spending each week or how much money you're saving every month. Calories are exactly the same. You don't necessarily have to track them. It's just that it'll give you a higher chance of success with them. And when it comes to my approach, now it depends, because some people I tell not to track at all. Some people, I'll have 10% of people who come to my program and I have everything calculated, calories, macros, everything. And I'll say, don't track them. I'm like, just follow the meal plan. I was like, and based on how you're responding, we'll adjust it. That's normally for the 10% of people who freak out over the numbers, or the 5% of people who just don't understand it. It's double Dutch to them. I may as well be speaking Japanese. So I normally just follow the making better food choice approach. This is normally for people in the kind of overweight obese category. So it's easier, because straight away making conscious food choices normally leads them to eating less calories, which normally reduces body fat and weight. But there's another 10% of people who I'll get them to track it rigidly. If I have somebody that says, I have a wedding in 6 weeks, or I have a photo shoot in 8 weeks, or I have, you know, this festival or event I want to look my absolute best for, and there's someone on the decent educational scale, they understand macros and calories and nutrition, because I have a kind of a range of people, because there's lots of different versions of my program, so I have a range of people that come through it. They're the people I get, cool, track it rigidly. I'm like, calculate, go on to the website, do your TDDE calculator, calculate how many calories you need, and then this is the plan we'll follow, and I want you to follow it to the letter. Your macros, your calories, a little bit more looser with macros, but hitting protein requirements and hitting calorie intake. Because if you're trying to get from a figurative 8 to a 9 or a 9 to a 10, i.e. photo shoot, i.e. looking your absolute best for your wedding, and you're already in pretty good shape, yeah, you'd probably need to track things more rigidly to get more dramatic results. But for 80% of people, I follow the approach of track your calories for a week or two. Just see how many calories you're actually eating. And then based on that, we'll find a plan and we're going to try and work into a deficit. So if somebody, you know, Karen or Dave, decide they're quitting slimming clubs and they're like, all right, cool, I'm coming through your program, I'll get them to track their calories. I'll either get them to track what they're normally eating, or for the first week or two of my plan, I'll get them to track it so they have an idea that this is the amount of calories and carbohydrates in X amount of rice, or, you know, this is the amount of calories or protein in X amount of chicken or salmon, or, you know, there's different recipes. So I'm just using basic examples for ease of simplicity in the explanation. But that's just to kind of get them a gauge. And then after a week or two, I go, cool, do it by eye. I'm like, do it by eye. I was like, now you have a general idea how much this amount of porridge looks like. Because some people have no concept of how much 80 grams of porridge oats looks like. And some people have zero concept on how much calories are in the sauces they've been adding to meals. So all that's doing is bringing awareness and a little bit of consciousness to, wow, that's quite a high calorie food, or that's quite a low calorie food, or actually that's really filling for that amount of calories in, you know, berries or nuts or whatever it is. And when, for the 80% of people, that tends to work really, really well, because I don't want people fixating on scales either, on scales in terms of weighing scales for their food. I don't want people calculating every macro and morsel of food they're eating into their food, because I don't think that's sustainable long term. I'm like, unless you're a competitive bodybuilder, unless you're a machine, you're not going to track every single calorie of every single macro and every single meal that you eat for the rest of your life. You're just not. You know, there's the machines out there and people that will, but most people that I work with don't. So it depends. So I think calorie tracking is like a tool. Like it's a tool in your arsenal. But like everything, it works well for some people and doesn't work well for others. You know, it's, you never want to be, as a coach in my experience, you know, to the man with the hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. Like you never want to apply the exact same approach to absolutely every single person, because different things work for different people. But with the amount of people that I work with my program and the levels at which they're coming at, that's normally the approach. I'll have the 10% of people who won't track anything, you know, 10 to 20%. I'll have another 10 to 20% of people who track every morsel of calorie and macro for the 6 or 8 weeks or 12 weeks based on the phase one and phase two of the program, based if they've got a very specific goal and they've got a high level of fitness education and nutritional education already. And then for the other 80% of people, it's very much a cool, let's track your calories, get a general idea of what you're eating so you know, and have a little bit of education around food, and then we'll just experiment with different recipes and different food options based on what works best for you. Like, I'm all about sustainability. Like, when it comes to body compositional change, you only have to do a couple of things. That's not why people fall off. Like, it's as simple as I said at this earlier in the podcast, the simple process of eat less calories than your body needs so you can tap into fat stores. Like, that's literally it. But that's not why people fall off. Like, if that was the case, every single diet book ever written would be eat less calories, mic drop. And there'd be fucking one-worded answers and no one would buy them. Like, but that's not the case. It's very much a, right, experiment what works for you. Find out foods that you enjoy, what fits into your lifestyle, what fits into your schedule, what can you stick to, what can you adhere to? Do you need to factor in some of your favorite foods every day? Do you need to have a chocolate bar factored into your caloric intake every day to stay on plan? Or would you prefer to eat really clean during the week and then have a couple of free meals at the weekend? What's going to work best for you? Because that's what's sustainable. So when it comes to calorie tracking, that's what I recommend. Again, there's free tools out there. TDD calculator, Google that, it'll bring it straight up. MyFitnessPal for tracking your calories, or any alternative app will track all your calories for you. But whether you should or not depends on you as a person and depends on your specific goals. But that's how I would approach calorie tracking in general.
I love that, because I think so many people, it is a, like, it's called personal training for a reason. So it has to be very personal to the actual person. And I think tracking calories shouldn't be a death sentence. It has to be a tool to, like, potentially, if you look at it, they're tracking calories for, say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, if you decide to go down that route, that could save you hassle and a burden of dieting potentially and educating yourself over the years, so you don't have to do it again or has to do it intermittently. I've got clients who have lost, I don't know, 40 or 50 pounds who have never tracked a calorie in their life. And it's just working with them on either like a food diary and kind of writing that down, or send the odd picture of their food over and working on portion control. It could be, it's different systems for different coaches, and there's nothing wrong with being the calorie counting coach if that's the kind of clients that you're working with. But for the level that myself and Brian will work with, there are about 10-15% that will never track calories, and that's okay too. Would it help? Potentially, but it has to be in the right hands. And I think that's the most important message out of that. Brian, I cannot thank you enough for having a chat again, coming on for the hat-trick appearance, and for having it and giving so many knowledge bombs in today's episode. Where can people find out about your stuff? What's coming up next for you? I know you have an intake of the fat loss program, stuff like that coming out.
Oh, legend, Shane, thank you so much again for having me on. I love our conversations. Like, we're literally an hour in. I'm like, how does that? That happens every time. It's I love it. So thank you so much. So anyone that wants to follow me, hit me up. Brian Keane Podcast is my podcast. Brian Keane Fitness on all the social media platforms. And the BKF Online Program is my online program for anyone that wants information on that. It's on the website, briankeanefitness.com. It's on the homepage on there. That's all the stuff for me.
I'm so excited for your next book, man. I cannot wait. That's number three.
Number three officially. I wrote a book for GA players, kind of in between The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, but that's just like a self-published book. The next one is, it's nearly done. So it's gone for its first proofread. I'm going to do an edit in the new year. And then as of now, it's going to be out September 2021. So I'm super excited for that one myself.
That's one positive out of COVID that brought that forward for you.
Yeah, by about 6 months. It was amazing. I'm delighted now. I would already be writing at this point.
Exactly. Yeah. So Brian, can I thank you enough for coming on, guys. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do tag myself and Brian up on your story. And I cannot, like, go and listen to Brian's podcast. If you haven't listened to Brian's podcast, you're missing out. Literally every week, it's literally incredible guests. Brian, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you so much again, Shane.
Thank you.